Cool.
Okay. Excellent.
Yeah, we'll line that up, and then we're in business.
So before we get started, like, we're about to ask you a bunch of questions. Is there anything you want to know about us to make sure you know who you're talking to? Like,
oh, I've been reading. So, yeah. I did some reading up. But is there anything you guys want to tell me?
We're big fans. That's pretty much
it. Yeah. Well, so this is like, I don't think this is a surprise to you, but we intend to, you know, broadcast this, not broadcast sure. it, but, you know, post it on our feed. So we should probably do an intro. So, you know, hey, everybody, welcome back to Drudging Nerd Culture. Not exactly, though. We're here with an interview with, I should let him introduce himself.
Hey, my name is Aram. I am the producer of Rise of the Demigods and God's Fall, both actual play podcasts, and I can't wait to talk with you all.
Yes, we're stoked. this is like, we're all in the same field, but there's definitely we've only just begun compared to, you know, the Rise of the Demigods and obviously your other continuing efforts with that group. So let's get into it. You want to kick us off, Ollie?
Yeah. So if you're willing to, we were wondering if you could just lay down some demographic, you know, interview kind of questions, like who are you, where are you from, whatever you're willing to share, that kind of thing.
Sure. My name is Aram Vartian. I am a 43-year-old, very out gay male who was raised in Washington, D.C. and recently moved to Chicago. I moved for podcasting because there's a huge improv community up here, which has been amazing for actual play podcasts, and also because I have family in the area. And aside from that, I've spent most of my life doing videography, photography, graphic design, web design, all self-taught when I dropped out of high school at about the beginning of 11th grade.
All right.
Yeah, people always ask me, I got a degree in video game design, and people are always like, hey, what'd you learn about video game design? And I was like, ooh, like, jack nothing. I made a bunch of friends, and that's what was important about
yeah.
it? But, like, you know, you can get a hold of anything nowadays. Like, that's great, though.
Yeah, and that's wonderful, because you actually answered one of the interview questions that I had written down, which was, I've noticed just listening to podcasts that a bunch of podcasters have degrees in things that have nothing to do with anything. Like, I'm about to have a degree in biomedical science, for whatever that's worth for this.
Yeah.
And I was wondering if you had the same thing, but it seems like this is more of just like an emergent, this is what you were focusing on, this is what became your passion, like media and design and all that sort of thing.
Everything I wanted to do, I just did. I just got my hands on it and did. I was fortunate that I was at the point, like when I was 25 and got my first gig, they would hand you a job for anything as long as you knew basic HTML. There were ads out in the Virginia area where they would give you $50,000 a year and a lease on a BMW if you could just do HTML. They were desperate because no one knew how to get into web and what to do with it. So that fortunately launched my whole career. And then I ended up working for newspapers. So I got to learn everything else on the job as I went. I just kept pushing on the door. And I was like, you know, we have to do video. And they were like, fine, do it. Here's a camera, go, you know, shut up, you know, and that's how I learned everything.
Sweet. All right.
I wanted to, like, sort of spinning off from that, you know, D&D and tabletop gaming in general, but, like, especially, you know, good old-fashioned Dungeons and Dragons has been in ascendancy lately. What was it like when you got started?
When I got started playing D&D?
Yeah. Yeah, I
was
into
seven.
The scene or what you the scene seven? Was, you know. Yeah, okay.
I was seven. It was 35 years old. It was 35 years ago, and my babysitter just wanted to shut me up for a couple hours. That's literally how I got started.
That's a great start.
Yeah, awesome.
I would love to play with a little kid because we played with his nephew once, mm-hmm. and little kids have the best imagination, which for things like D&D is so fun.
Yeah, like he was just raring to go. Like he had the immediate instincts to fight and steal. Those are the two, like, you know, the D&D, the core impulses. That's the classic D&D. So when did you first, like, you know, get a hold of a group and, like, do it, you know, do it up for real?
Yeah, I joined a couple D&D groups and other groups, too. I was in an unbelievable vampire game for like 7 years. That was fantastic. But I joined groups and then eventually figured out that I wanted to DM. And I took a couple shots at it. And all of them were abject failures. Just complete and total failures of both the game I was trying to run and my own character. And so I learned a lot from those as I moved on, mainly that, you know, if you're going to DM, you have to be a little confident in your own skin. You have to be a little comfortable because all of your insecurities will just come right out. And so there was a big game that died, and I took a 10-year stop from playing D&D. I missed all of 4th edition completely. And then 5th edition rolls around, and I start hearing about it and seeing things about it, and it looks exciting. And I want to try it again. I want to give D&D, I want to give DMing one more shot, because I've been working on the idea for God's Fall for a couple years. And so I just kind of launched into it, and it went really well. It went amazingly well. I couldn't believe how well it went. But I think a lot of that is the new system, and a lot of that is the fact that I don't really learn from books. So I found all the podcasts out there, and there were all these, not as many as there are now, but there were a bunch of actual play podcasts out there, which I had never heard of. And so being able to listen to a group play and learn the rules that way was much more helpful for me. The only problem I got into is that right away, I didn't know if they were getting the rules right. Like, there was no way to know. They could just say something, you had to assume it, right? And there was also no editing and no production, so I was kind of lost in some of them. Like, who are these people? Why haven't they announced themselves? How come I just got dumped into a room on the 4th game, right? And so I decided to try and bring both of those things into it, and that was the main reason I started my first show.
All right.
Yeah. I to my understanding, the taking an intermission at 4th edition was a pretty common tactic. So it given its reputation, and I don't know that you missed much.
I haven't been into Dungeons & Dragons for as long as Cooper has, but from what little I've gathered, it seems like most people are like, 4th edition, I'd rather play Pathfinder.
But yeah, I mean, you know, 5th edition was obviously like kind of kicked the door open as far as the ease of use. And like what you said earlier about the confidence, and like, you know, once I think anyone who's run a game, you know, me and Ollie both have. Ollie's a little newer on the game running business, and it's just, you know, the second you feel that you've let something slip, it's like in your mind it's all over, even if everyone else is like super on board.
Yeah.
Like, one of the things I really, you know, we talked about it in the review, one of the things I'm really into about Rise of the Demigods is that everyone is very, very, helping to facilitate. Nobody's trying to, like, you know, get a leg up and outsmart or whatever. Like, and that can be fun in its own way, but for sure, something that you're doing on a show, like, everybody's got a real good attitude about that sort of thing.
Yeah, it would be a while if this was a PvP-based game.
Yeah. Well, it could be. It might be at any time.
Right. Yeah, that's permitted.
Again, I got to put my money down on the monk.
It's early on, especially with the actions the way they are, it's tough. But we don't need to we don't need to violate the game content laws. Getting into the nitty gritty here, Ollie. What's up? What's next?
So you mentioned that you had gotten back into D&D right around the time that you had been working on Godfall for some time, and we're interested in your setting and this thing you've made, and we haven't been able to get it yet because of, you know, being broke college students or ex-college students.
Roughly, yeah.
And we were wondering, just based on what we've listened, like, it's really interesting, it's very complex. Where did the inspiration for Godfall come from? And are you the sole creator, or have you had co-creators working on this with you for some time?
Well, anytime you sit down at a table, you've got co-creators. Anytime you're playing with someone, there's ideas that are going to bounce back and forth. So I definitely always have co-creators in everything I've made. But as far as like sitting down, writing the backstory, getting everything done, producing it, that's all me. I've done everything for it. I've done all the lab. The only thing I haven't done for it is the art. And the main map, and some of the maps I have done, because I design maps as well. So I just basically put a lot of hours into it. It was something that I wanted to do for a really long time. And the main impetus for it has, honest to God, was taking control of magic. There are so many games that I've been in where it goes really great, like up until like 4th or 5th level. And then everyone wants to run to the largest city with all the gold they have, and use the Dungeon Master's Guide as a shopping list for magic items. And at that point, it just kind of like falls apart for me. Like there's an idea where when you commoditize magic, it takes away the magic. And I wanted it to all feel special and unique, and I wanted each character to have special and unique things. Because I don't mind overpowering them. That's fine. Like, you give people all the abilities you want, as long as it makes sense for the character and adds to their individuality, as opposed to just buying one more Helm of Telepathy. So that was the main reason, to basically blow up the world and rebuild it. And the other reason was because I wanted to tell a different kind of story. I wanted to tell a story where there's a lot of people who tell stories where LGBT people are present, but they have to go through all of their trauma. They have to go through all of their ostracization and differences from society in order to be accepted and then have this arc. And I don't own it. Won that. My players don't owe anyone that. I wanted to make a world where it was different from ours, where the ideas of who people can be are different than ours. Because honestly, they cast fireball. They cast lightning bolt. There are dragons. Who gives a damn if you're gay? I mean, it doesn't make any sense. So I wanted to write a world in where that was reflected.
So there's no LGBT specific powers? Because like, that would be real convenient.
It would be actually, yeah. Some of them can cast rainbow. Otherwise than that,
nothing. Yeah, well, color spray you can get a hold of really early on.
Only gay people. No one else can cast color spray.
Right. It's just your.
It's just whatever spray. Your flag is.
I'm right. Down for that. It's whatever your flag is exactly.
But yeah. Oh man, that's like I gotta go write that after this. Like
that's excellent.
Pull up a wiki page. But you know, we can all do it. But where was I going? Sometimes the like actual like source books weigh in on LGBT business and all that, and I'm like just like, oh come on, you know, like unless you're going to go in for full enthusiasm and full pro, what's the point? Because you know everybody's just going to do their own thing with it anyway. I mean, I think part of the like the success of D&D is that they challenge you, they imply like, here's this, but really whatever. But I do like, we both, and I imagine all of your listeners super appreciate you just like putting your foot down, like, no, this is built in. This is a part of the game.
Yeah. I mean, I couldn't see doing it any other way. Initially it was just me and I wasn't really thinking about it. Like it wasn't a lot of thought. I just did it 'cause it was my instinct. And then I started getting letters from like kids who were like, I'm 16 and I'm in Southern Florida and I have no gay friends, but I feel a little less sad every time I listen to your show. And at that point it was like, okay, I'm fully in. This is going to be 100% what I do. And then the next show, of course, was, an all LGBTQI cast. So, that's just been my focus because I feel like it's a story I feel comfortable telling and one that gives me joy.
Right on. Hell right on.
You brought up, the LGBTQ thing. That actually leads into another question that I have. This is also a LGBT plus household of varying parts. And, we all know the internet is a trash fireplace that exists, but we live here anyways. And as being such a openly gay and LGBT space, such an LGBT program, how have you experienced the internet? How has that, what has happened for you so far? How do you feel around there?
It's mostly good. Twitter is pretty much universally positive. Occasionally I run into something. Facebook, pretty much the same way. Reddit, I kind of avoid, I'm kind of scared of Reddit. Most of the time it's very positive, but once in a while you get some huge negativity. That said, we got blasted by dude bros after our third episode because, we treated women like people. So apparently, wow, that was a mistake. And they just came at us. There were podcasts about us and videos about us, just screaming about treating women like people. And I didn't understand it. It was the weirdest thing, but it's what made us popular. Because every person who wasn't an asshole who listened to that or heard that was like, well, I got to listen to these people now. And that's how our audience came to us. So I guess thank you, dude, bros from Reddit, in a way.
The sales pitch of spite is really, because... that's the flip side of the coin is like people can find each other, you know, in the way that you described mm-hmm. earlier with like, I'm 16 years old. I don't know anyone in real life, but this kind of brings it together. Yeah, no, that's pretty good. So, third episode, am I thinking correctly, like, is that Janice's introduction or third episode of the show proper?
Oh, I'm sorry. This is the third episode of God's Fall. We've actually had no blowback mm-hmm. on Rise at all. None. There has been, I haven't seen one, I'm sure it's out there somewhere, but I have not seen one negative thing. On God's Fall, in the third episode, I introduced a woman who had never played the game before, and she was playing an elf noble at a rich, fancy ball, and the very first question I asked her was, what are you wearing? Didn't really think about it, it just popped out, and she was like, well, that sounds great. I can't wait to play this. However, did you ask the guys what they were wearing? You know what I mean? As the only woman at this table, isn't it a tad odd that you're only asking me what I'm wearing? And she was completely right. So we had this little conversation about expectations in fantasy and how it can scapegoat women and how it can like just pigeonhole certain roles that they're in. And then she went on to describe the dress in detail. And it was wonderful. We didn't think a damn thing of it. And that caused everything. It was just an explosion at that point.
Yeah, no, the fact, whenever you start playing a lot of these, you know, immersive games where you have to make up your own world and, like, be the storyteller, you sort of recognize your implicit biases just based on living in a culture that is this way despite you not being that kind of person. It's really surprising.
Yep.
Also, to be fair, women have so much better clothing that's so much more interesting.
That's true. She did describe a hell of a peacock dress. It was really neat. I wanted it.
Yeah, it's just like, oh, what are you wearing? I know what you're wearing. You're wearing a suit. Shut up.
Exactly.
And, you know, back in D&D times, it might have been a little more, loosey-goosey, yeah. For whatever that means.
But no, it's good to know that that sort of realization and change occurs so willingly in you. That's good to know.
Well, it's good to have people around my table that I trust that will call me out on my inherent biases and also just on my lack of awareness. You know, because everyone has them.
Of course.
Yeah.
Questions you want to?
Yeah. So how did you and the Rise crew come together?
Mm-hmm. Ooh, okay. So I had a couple of them I had contacted just before I went into a mental hospital, and the others I contacted just after I got out of a mental hospital. It was a very difficult time for me, and I wasn't really aware of who I was at that point and aware of how to move forward, but I had already kind of gotten into this thing where I was going to start this new show. I met with two of them saying, look, you know, I have done these things. I have hurt some friends and I am pulling myself together and I feel stronger, but I don't exactly know where I am. So I need you to know all of this before we even consider sitting down at the same table. And shockingly to me, all four of those people came back and said, yeah, I want to do this. And they had met with each other and talked with each other and been like, are we sure Aram is stable enough that this will be a safe environment for all of us? And I'm really grateful that they did, because I love the fact that they already felt safe enough to speak with each other and comfortable enough with me that they could speak with each other outside of me. So it was basically just like I put a call out and I talked to some people who I knew or some people that I had met, and I put together a team that I thought was going to be wonderful, and I didn't know how great they were going to be. I'm still blown away by how generous and wonderful and kind they all are. But it was a difficult time in general.
Right on. That's like incredibly gutsy. Like, and I don't want to like blow up your spot or anything, but just, you know, in a position of already not feeling at your best to then reach out to four people you don't know, like on the internet, all, like at a baseline standard, that's like, ooh, you know, to me. But I do like, you know, not to blow up my own spot either, I found that like the responsibility of I need to put a game together and run it and manage these people and like work hard to provide this good experience really, really helps when I'm having a down time and you know, when the other, like, you know, when I'm having a hard time drumming up enthusiasm, it's like, okay, here's some systems. I know how they work. Let's tell a story. Like, let's have a good time. And that, like, compared to, you know, I don't know, drinking one sorrows away or whatever is, it's so constructive, I find, personally, you know.
It's basically, like, escapist media that is more conducive to your imagination and your growth because it's your escape that you're creating. So that's, you know, probably the best way to do that.
Yeah.
If my mind is troubled, the best way for me to order it is to work, is to, especially work that I love. And this is work that I absolutely love. No matter how hard it is, no matter how many hours I put into it, it's work of joy. And that certainly puts my mental state in better order.
And if this is to a subtweet of all three of us here in this call, but also to my, if my friend Curtis is listening, you never run out of ideas for things to work on with tabletop stuff, right? Like there's always, you know, more just outside of your reach. Like, you know, I could, if I didn't have to either sleep, I could do it for eternity. Like, yeah.
Yeah. I mean, I'm trying to bring God's Fall to a close at the same time I'm launching Rise, but I got this other superhero show just knocking on the back of my head that wants to get out so badly, you know. And there's a Call of Cthulhu game that I'm working on. It never stops.
Yeah, absolutely. Absolutely.
So, I was wondering, you mentioned you had, you know, people sending you letters, and that really inspired you to, you know, be or continue this kind of work. And that's something that interests me because, like, you're pretty popular, you know? You have a number of fans. But you're also not a movie star. You're not like a household name. How does it feel to have this weird level of internet fame?
It's like a secret identity because most people are like, I don't know who you are. You know what I mean? Like, I'll go to my doctor. What do you do? You know, for a living. And you try and explain it to them and they just look at you like, that's not a job. No one does that. So it's this weird, like, I will go to a convention or I'll meet certain people and there's this wellspring of joy for their meeting me. And it's a very strange thing because you walk 5 feet and you're just an absolutely non-entity, you know, over again, which is honestly how I prefer to live my life. It's it's very cool talking to people who are into what I do, who want to do their own thing, who have stories to tell or have enjoyed stories in my world. That's super cool. Seeing fan art is probably the most amazing, magical thing I've ever seen in my life. At the same point, like, I don't understand how people could exist like that all the time. I don't know how people could possibly be like, I can't walk outside without 8 people pulling out their cell phones. That seems like hell to me. So I would much rather prefer this small level where I can dip into it, meet some people, have a good time, and get the hell out.
Fair enough.
Oh, yeah. I mean, it's such like a stereotype now, but I mean, like, big, major celebrities are so often making baffling decisions, and you suspect that just, like, the, you know, the constant noise gets to them. Like, this seems like a real nice sweet spot.
Yeah. Also, we all make stupid decisions all the time. We just have cameras on us.
Yeah, absolutely.
You know? Yeah.
Yeah, you know, and like, you know, you want to give the sort of very, like, the very friendly, the very, like, this is just me persona, which is, like, for the most part, you know, those Venn diagrams, that's all, but you still need to maintain, you know, your own self, lest things get traced back to you when the revolution comes, or whatever. So most of the questions I have left are more in the world, in the podcast, and in the zone. So, Ollie, I don't know if you have any other, like, sort of meta questions.
Well, just a few quick, easy ones, just to get sort of a feel for you, I suppose. There's so many tabletop games out there. Which one is, like, your number one, your favorite?
Well, my favorite to run is D&D. It always has, but it's been the one that I always go back to. That's one of my absolute favorites to run. As far as playing, I really do enjoy D&D. However, the best game I've ever played in was a 7-year vampire game that my friend Michael ran, who also plays Zion on God's Fall. And it was perfect from front to back. He's an amazing storyteller. He does so many voices that we knew who we were talking to just by the voice. We didn't even have to introduce the character, right? And it just was, it was a world that was very familiar because it's modern day, so it was easy to kind of inhabit. And it just provided a lot of opportunities for really interesting storytelling. And now that said, the new system is trash. And so a lot of the ideas that they've made is absolute trash. However, I enjoyed the base system.
Sure. I know very little. The old world versus the new world of darkness, right? Those are the, like, and that comes with, you know, here's the masquerade or the vampire book, here's the, you know, fairy book, and so on and so forth. That's I'm thinking of the right thing. Okay.
Yep, exactly. Changelings, werewolves, everything. Yeah.
All right. Well, that being said, what fictional world would you love to inhabit more than any other? You can say your own. That's okay.
No, mine is dangerous.
The one.
Mine is dangerous and awful and top down and like needs to be, needs a revolution. I don't want to do that.
Your world is top down. That's what you're saying. That's great.
Yeah, it totally is, man. It's all just top down. It's all awful and it's ruled by people who have too much power and too little empathy. So no, I don't want any part of that. Where would I be? I'm trying to think of a fantasy world that would be like really nice where everything's just, oh, you know what? What's that one with the dogs and they're different, like one's a fireman and one's a cop. My nephew watches this all the time. Yes, Paw Patrol. I want to live in Paw Patrol. And I'll tell you why. I want to live in Paw Patrol because the adults are all morons, yet they get to live wonderful lives. This woman gets to be a mayor and she's incompetent to do anything. All the adults are utterly incompetent, but everything gets taken care of by awesome dogs. And nothing's ever wrong. And I'll take that.
You know, that's a pretty great idea.
I can dig it. That's the positive mirror universe of a series of unfortunate events where the tragedy is that all the adults are, clueless.
Right. Yeah, that's perfect. Yeah, all the adults are clueless. Well, they don't have dogs. If they had dogs, I'm a little bummed that all the cats are evil. I'd have to capture and rehabilitate some of the cats. Otherwise than that, it's a perfect, perfect world.
That's something like for the kids. I think they should in the finale do hey, they could be saved perhaps.
Not all cats are evil. They're not baked in. Come on.
My impulse would probably be to say Steven Universe for similar reasons, just because vanilla Earth civilians generally don't have that bad of a time. There just happens to be a world in which this fantastical magic exists, but, I don't have to personally get in on that.
Yeah, nothing life-threatening.
Right, you don't have to suffer, yeah.
I mean, I would have to say One Piece, but that's just because I tattooed it on my damn chest.
At this point,
I can't say no.
Right.
That's great. Actually, one of my characters, Doug, who plays Doro Not in God's Fall, modeled the entire character after Luffy from One Piece.
Okay, I need to listen to that. Yeah, I haven't gotten into it because I found Rise first.
Yeah, we're all caught up on Rise. We're going to have to do our research back in time there. But
I'd love to hear what you think. The audio's a little rough in the first year, I'm not going to lie. I was using shotgun mics in an open room because I had no idea it was going to become anything, but it gets better as you go on.
So is ours until, yesterday. We can't really,
We just got brand new mics and a mixer. We're still learning how to use any of it.
Yeah.
I just looked over and realized, Cooper, you had the damn your microphone.
Oh, the pad?
Yeah.
Oh, boy. Well,
we'll fix that.
I mean, we're going to have to figure it out, won't we?
It's okay.
What mixer are you guys using?
The Pile PX36 something.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. I know that one. Excellent. Yeah.
Cool. All right. Then one last non-in-universe-based question, I suppose. What works of fiction influenced you most when you were a child? Or even now, I suppose.
Yeah, I mean, like, when I was real young, cartoons like, He-Man, Mask, X-Men, Transformers, all that kind of, where they do something and it's magical and they come to Earth and it's magical, kind of thing. And then as far as reading, I read Lord of the Rings. I read a lot of D&D books. Probably the most impactful fictional world for me was the whole Dragonlance world. I was absolutely fascinated by that and all of those books. And then just a lot of, other ones like, The Lion, the Witch, and the Wardrobe and a lot of other, fictional books that I would just pick up and read and try out. A lot of... there was one where a girl kept pulling her hair. I can't remember what it was called for the life of me. And there was a Wheel of Time. That's what it was. So that one as well.
All right. All right. I want to follow up because we made mention of it in our episode too. The X-Men comparisons are pretty rife. Was that intentional? Like did you go in knowing you were doing an X-Men sort of, you know,
100%.
Okay.
100%. I mean, I even do a whole White Queen speech. I do the whole, what is her name? Shoot. She has the powers of diamonds.
Emma Frost.
Yes. Thank you. Mm-hmm. I do Emma Frost's whole, you know, they will always hate us. Never right. forget that speech. Like right in the middle of their quote unquote danger room. So yeah, it was absolutely a direct analogy. Mm-hmm. I always liked the X-Men because I liked how mutants had a power set and everything kind of followed that. So you would know who they were. Like, this is Iceman. All this stuff is ice, right? Mm-hmm. And that's kind of how, that's exactly how our characters work out too. If you're the demigod of X, all your powers are going to follow along that line.
Oh yeah. 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 And that makes it so easy to like kind of get acclimated to the large cast too, was like very, you know, good to latch on to those characters, especially without like a visual associated with it. Like really handy. So I got to ask, and you don't have to answer if this could turn into a spoiler for your players if they end up hearing this, but so the rebel leader Blue Dragons are the lightning breathers in D&D. That's Magneto.
Yeah.
Okay. Cool. Well,
The powers. Not
that's
the
gotta
powers.
Be not exactly the powers, yeah. But yeah.
Yeah, but yeah, but definitely that is the head of the Brotherhood. Yeah.
Yeah.
No sure. doubt whatsoever.
For sure. Yeah. Okay. I needed that personal vindication, you know, but that's neither here nor there.
All right. Let's get into some more of questions about the sure. world and the podcast itself. I've been curious, to what extent is each session planned? Like, how much of it is, I wrote this out, I know what's happening, and how much is, damn it, Barb, okay, this happens now?
Yeah, recently it's been the latter. But I do write a lot. I am a DM who prepares a lot. When I was running Rivals of Waterdeep, my first 7 games were almost 40 pages of written notes, with bullet points and links back to D&D Beyond, like the whole deal, right? Mm-hmm. I like to prepare a lot. Whether I use it or not doesn't seem to matter, because the preparation is good. But the way that I prep is like, I write worlds, I very detailed worlds, I make very detailed maps, and then I create NPCs with motivations. And I write out what those NPCs are going to want to do over the next week, 2 weeks, month, year. And I let the players just do whatever they want, and then make little adjustments or bring in NPCs when there's conflict or whatever. And that allows me to have a lot of background written so that I understand my world and my characters and my motivation, but it doesn't hamper the players and force them down certain roads, because they can do whatever, you know, whatever they want. That said, about half of what I've been doing recently has just been complete improv on the spot. Barb going into hell and meeting demons in hell and things like that, or just have just been like, oh, okay, we're going there. Yeah, this is what's going to happen.
I think you just spoiled the next episode for us.
Oh, that's okay. That's okay.
Sorry.
That's okay. We're only...
We're one episode behind. We listen to it while we go to other work.
Mm-hmm.
Fair job. Enough.
That's all well and good. I you know, if demons don't show up eventually, that ain't D&D. Right. That's the third D that just didn't make it into the title.
Yeah, that's right. Dungeons, Dragons, and Demons.
Not
yeah.
Dungeons, Dragons, Dive-Ins, and Drives?
That's different. That guy is absolutely an agent of chaos, though. Where's the flame right on? Your motivation strategy is very interesting, because that's like one of the things I really appreciate, is that like among the students especially, there's a lot who are, you know, clearly scheming, or at least giving that impression, or just openly saying that they're scheming, in you know, Malvorn's case, but like then you have others who are just like, well, I'm just here at school, time to have a good day. And like the intersection of all of that has been fun. And each of the party members, of course, deals with those in different ways. So is this just really excellent role-playing on the players' parts? You didn't, did you assign the divinities, or did they select their own? No?
They picked everything. They picked everything all on their own. They picked their characters, they picked their backgrounds, they picked their divinities, they picked...
I had a feeling, like, I wouldn't want to sign up for a superhero game and then not get to pick the superpower, but also they're all very, very convincing with regards to their varying degrees of accepting their powers and confusion about their origins and stuff like that. Obviously, you still have the origins in the pocket, but, you know, just the powers.
Yeah. Yeah, they all had really solid ideas. It was interesting because it's different from how I did God's Fall. when I did God's Fall, I told all the gods were dead already. There had been a huge, giant cataclysm and a war in which all the gods had killed themselves or killed each other. And I told them, like, you know, I want you to build a character and then choose an old dead god that you think if religion was still real, you would have worshipped or your character would have worshipped. They had no idea they were going to become the new gods and gain all these divine powers. So everything was a surprise from then on out.
That's amazing.
Yeah, groove into it.
So does that mean a Rise of the Demigods is a prequel?
Yeah, Rise of the Demigods happens 105 years before God's Fall and 5 years before the end of the world.
Well, that's unfortunate for them.
Right. Well, you know.
Yeah, it's not great.
It is a certain broad picture, you know, ending, spoiler, but, you know, still getting to see how it rides out in between is good.
They've already found out that there's been two cast members from God's Fall who have showed up on two characters who have showed up on Rise. And by one of them showing up, they've already found out that at least one demigod survives the God's War. So there's always a possibility. Yeah, yeah, yeah.
I really just cannot not listen to Godfall at this point.
Yeah, yeah. No, I mean, you know, we were already sold, but you know, that's like kind of sort of becoming a further priority. Yeah.
I would love to hear what you think. It's a lot higher production on God's Fall because it's an all audio format. There's a lot more editing, especially towards the last two seasons. I started composing music with loops and, you know, crafting everything just right. So because it's all audio and I don't have to rely on the camera, I was able to do a lot tighter of an edit. I'd be interesting to see what you all think of it.
Yeah, that's already like absolutely baffling. You know, just like, again, the finite number of hours in a day, then leading, like, the demigods, we were already pretty stunned. I've listened to a handful of actual plays. I've only really stuck with Rise and with Dames and Dragons, which is a much closer in budgetary level to what we're doing, more so, or at least in the way it sounds.
Sure.
You know, and that's never like, a requirement, but still it's very impressive. So you saying that is like, ooh, my mouth's water, but you're still in the spot here, Rom. So
yeah, it took me until I moved to Chicago and met a crew up here to switch to actual stick mics, like the Shure one that I'm using now. But even then, I mean, my mixer board, it's $500. It's an L12, right? But these mics, I got most of them used for like $50-$60 each on eBay. So it's not a hideously expensive setup to sound the way we do.
Wow.
Groovy. Yeah, yeah.
Speaking of all of the editing that you do, all of the finite work, I was wondering how much of all of your productions, suppose, are just you? How much of the editing, how much of the cast control, like how much of the day-to-day do you do?
All of it. The production is 100% me. I do all the editing, I do all the recording, I do all of the Foley work and the music work, I do all the filming, do all the editing of that, all the gear is mine. We're doing an episode on the Prism Pals where each show involved has taken a color of the rainbow, and Nikki DM'd and is running that whole show. And I'd love to do more of that, where the cast runs their own show, runs a side story, and then just takes over. Because A, it cuts down on my workload, and B, I like that it's not just my voice. One of the problems I had with God's Fall that I didn't realize until too late is that it was too much my voice. It was too much my show, when it was clearly everyone's show. And so I really try and highlight that more with Rise of the Demigods, and I hope that comes through.
Yeah, you could also try what Campaign, the Star Wars podcast, does, where the players get randomly assigned an NPC that shows up and get to improvise. If you can, you know.
That's great.
It makes for some wacky times.
Yeah, I need to listen to that. That's excellent.
A while back, me and some friends played Shadowrun, and I've since become heartbroken that these might be the only people in the world who will ever be willing to read the Shadowrun rulebook and play again. And you know, they just don't have the time now. But you have contacts who you hit up for various side things, and we all played each other's contacts, and that was a good time because they were never really directly involved in the plot. But it's like, okay, I'm calling my arms merchant. That's Ollie, or you know, not Ollie, literally, but
whoever. Oh god, no, I will never play Shadowrun. It It's
a lot. It's the worst. Lot. Exactly. It's really, really like if you can get in there, it's super good, but like it's you know, it's a miracle to
there's a lot of doors you gotta open
yeah
in order to get to that place. It's funny, like there's on the superhero show that I'm working on, so it's gonna be pardon me, it's gonna be modern day based in Chicago. Everyone's gonna have their own, you know, superhero, right? But you're all they're also gonna be you know playing reporters and politicians and other dignitaries within the Chicago area. So every time we do the recap episode, it's a news style interview of what happened last week, or a radio guy on the air talking about what happened last week and that kind of thing. So they're all going to be involved that way.
Oh, that's lovely. What engine are you running this this superhero on?
1.0 version of my own system. So we'll see what happens.
All right.
Nope, that's it. We have to talk about this. What is this
it's system? It's very early, okay? I have nothing to share right now. I'll definitely come back with more. I have an outline for it, and I'm testing some basic ideas. And if it works the way I want it to work, the whole goal of it is to have a superhero system that is just crunchy enough to be satisfying, but more focused on storytelling, so it's aimed towards the kind of show that I do now. I wanted to write a system that was basically about podcasting and about more of that storytelling aspect. So we'll see.
All right. Well, if you need any help, you know, hit us up. We're making our own as well. So that's always fun.
Yeah, slinging ideas for sure.
Our entire thing is basically just like, what if you could do anything? Want to do dumb magic? Let's do dumb magic.
Yeah, it is a little more sort of mechanically heavy, like not heavy, but
it's less so than D&D.
It's got we like the min maxing and the ability to get crunchy with it, but like part the magic inflexibility that D&D has and has always had, and that's part of the conventions. You know, I embrace it when it's D&D time, but you know, we're trying to make a more custom magical do as you like within your theme rather than you know, here's the fireball, it's always 40 feet wide, right, or whatever, you know.
Here are all your spell slots. Yeah.
Exactly.
But enough about that, we're talking about you.
Yeah.
What motivated you to start a podcast specifically? I know that you mentioned you had been working in the newspaper for a while and you heard about, you know, video needing to become an important aspect of all that. But what led you to this?
It was just listening to other ones. It was listening to other shows and getting an idea of them, and mainly the fact that I wanted to introduce editing. I was like, okay, this is all good. These are great ideas. These are interesting personalities. Now, if we just had a bit of editing, a pause where some music could swell, if I could just drop these other voices and focus on this one, little things like that that I thought would be better for storytelling, and that's why.
Okay.
Yeah, groovy. Did you have like a... I tend to have just a little something before I start running a campaign that it, like, sort of encapsulates the tone, and that'll be different, like, if I'm playing a Shadowrun or whatever, than you know, playing D&D and depending on the audience and stuff. But did you have, like, a tone-setting, you know, premise with everyone? Because, you know, it the subject matter in Rise of the Demigods, it's not graphic, but it is grim, and the players act accordingly. It's not, like, you know, it obviously... the plot stuff sort of pulls off from X-Men. It's not quite as shiny, you know, kid-friendly as X-Men is often, not always, but, you know, like, was that intention set as a team, or did the players inform that?
Twice in a row, I had no idea what was going to happen. Mm-hmm. With God's Fall, I kind of expected... I set up this... I set up this God King with like this idea that he would be a beneficial ruler, you know, a beneficial universal ruler. And it quickly became apparent that that is not what I had set up. What I had set up was a top-down patriarchy that they all sought to tear down, which was great. And Rise was the same way. I set up this school where I kind of thought it was going to be a little magic, a little kind of, you know, demigod Hogwarts, where everyone was going to have like suspicions, but a generally good time. And within 3 days, they've torn the whole thing down. So, I mean, it's like, you know, they're just ready for a revolt. So both times, it's gone different from what I expected it to do. But that's great because I can't see the whole picture. And they've shown me blind spots that I had on some of the things I was creating. And it just evolved from there.
A plan will never survive contact with the enemy, or however that phrase goes.
Exactly. You mentioning that reminded me of something that I said during the actual review of your show, which was just, I kind of wish the show was more, let's go to school, but then they're just like, nope, we're going to destroy the school. I'm like, God damn it. Okay.
Yeah. Yeah, we got no time for that whatsoever. There was maybe one day where they were like, let's try our classes. We hate these.
I mean, maybe if they'd gotten to take that invention class, things would have gone a
little bit. I know. That's where everything went downhill right there.
That's part of the, you know, hey, want to know more about how this school normally works? Check out the book, right?
Exactly.
Yeah.
There'll be a whole, there'll be chapters on how it's, I've laid out the maps and how it's going to work and how it's going to function and how the instructors will normally be and everything. You know, it'll be a little creepy top down because that's how we've established it, but I could see how like you could play it as a normal school, at least for a semester.
Right.
Yeah. Be one of the background characters who thinks everything's okay.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, it's a whole team of Wendells, and you'll be all set.
Wendells and Kreese.
Yeah, Wendells, Kreese, and Slugs was perfectly happy to be there.
Oh, yeah, no, it seems like it, yeah.
It doesn't seem like it's not like he doesn't notice things, he's just like, I don't care.
Just straightforward attitude.
It's interesting you mentioned that, because like as Slugs is now with the main team, because they're all in a... Okay, hang on. I can't say that because it's a spoiler.
Right.
Now that there's more Slugs, to say it that way, you really get an idea of the fact that Slugs is smarter than he seems. He's just really loyal to everyone around him, you know, because he was raised in a way, and you'll see that too. He was raised in a way that it makes sense. So I think out of all the characters, he's my favorite because he gets faced with a lot of adversity and a lot of, you know, just... you know, bigotry based on who he is and what he is. And he's just this effortlessly positive person who is willing to do whatever he can to help everyone around him.
Who's your favorite? Absolutely do not answer that.
Do you want to start a fight? Let's do it.
That's so hard.
No, we don't need to make it spicy.
How about this? How about this question? Who's the most troublesome? Who's the one who goes and messes with your plans the most?
You know, I want to say Barb, but it's not 100% true. It is a toss-up between Barb and Astrid. Those two mess with my plans all the time. Arvy just wants to be... I'm sorry, Arvy. Janice just wants to be fabulous. Arvy just wants to be fabulous as well. But Janice just wants to be fabulous. And you can, even though you know that, you know... And Theodore is just going to do whatever's right. So those two are easy. I think my favorite character would be Theodore. I mean, just... Just a if I was going to pick a friend that I had to rely on in game,
without a doubt, I think everyone
like whenever I go into a campaign, I make a conscious decision about like and based on the rest of the party whether this time I'm going to try to help the GM's like suggested course along or whether I'm going to be a thorn in their side. On a podcast, I would ease up on the thorn in the side business, but you know, Theodore definitely seems to be the most, you know. I will accept the face value and you know, act accordingly. And, you know, Janice is also has that instigating spirit, but instigates in a way that is gathering information, which gives you more license to do what you're going to do. You know, Astrid and Barb are more likely to just, you know, start verbal fights or fist fights or whatever. And that, of course, is necessary.
Or fires.
Yeah.
I've mentioned, I think Janice has become my favorite just because we both have the same sensual goddess energy that I love. Also, like, the power.
Yes.
Secrets. It's just so good.
That power set is extraordinary. I agree with you about Slugs, too. That spiders is like a very, very encompassing set of abilities. Did you have like a... What was your process for filling out the NPC roster, like creating the students and staff?
Oh, I was just like, what's a cool ability? Like, I would always start with like, okay, books. What can I do with books? Because there's going to be books in a school, how can books be cool? And then just made like this reading rainbow-esque, you know, power set around books, right? So it was just what I thought would be interesting. And then also, you know, I wanted to have certain types of characters. Like I wanted to have a Malvorn, which was a, you know, elitist, cocky, rich, dude, yeah. asshole, right? And then, like, what power set can I give to him that would make him even yeah. worse? Victory, right? You know, so that's how I built everything. I took the archetypes first and then figured out how their powers would work along with it. Or sometimes I would just take a power set that I thought was cool and then build a character around that. Like, I thought arms was neat. You know, she can make mm-hmm. weapons and armor. Let's go with that. What is mm-hmm. you know, what is she?
And so, that's the superhero, you know, pattern too, for sure.
So that leads me to another question.
Totally.
Why condensation? Why is that a...
Because it was the best. And no one, because everyone thought it was pathetic. That was my favorite part. They all laughed when he was like, I am the demigod of condensation. But when you start to think about it, it's like, oh, wait a minute. Clouds are condensation, right? Fog is condensation. You can do things with ice because condensation super cools things. I mean, it just gets to be a ridiculous set of powers. And I always loved power sets that seem ridiculous, but then end up being badass. Like on, if you ever watched the Misfits, yes. It was a British superhero show. And one character, a couple seasons in, ends up having control over milk. And everyone's like, milk? But then they do what sure. they do, and you're like, oh, holy crap. You know, this is unbelievably powerful.
Yeah, and then so some I of love the stuff like some that. Of the more powerful seeming powers, like, I'm Nathan, I'm immortal, is just trash. Just...
Right, total trash. Yeah, exactly. Who wants to be immortal? It's a punishment and a curse, you know.
All right, that's good.
I know the I'm misplacing the name right now, but the demigod of condensation, the combat instructor, like the party has designated that as your self-insert character. Do you is that the most?
Yes, it is. Okay, because it is.
Yeah, yeah. Like I've had characters pointed to as that before in my campaigns, and I'm like, that wasn't my plan, but you know, like they all are to a certain extent. But no. Do you have a pattern? Like, do you have a recurring self-insert? Is that an Aram archetype or?
I think I have a recurring self-insert of my ideas, desires. Mm-hmm. Into shows in general. There's a lot of me. And absolutely when I play PCs, when I'm playing in someone else's game, there's always a bit of me in it. I've never done anything as purposeful as Dima. I literally told the artist, just draw them like me. You know? So I've never done anything quite that purposeful. But yeah, there's always some aspect of me in them. And I just don't think you can avoid it. You're writing from your own point of view. There's going to be an aspect of you in your character.
Yeah, I try not to even worry about it. I just go all in. I'm me. I'm my character. Let's go for it.
Yeah. I haven't done one like completely in my own voice where I'm just me yet. That would be kind of fun. I'd like that.
Mine is always tends to be if there's ever a dragon fight, that's the me and just the personality of the dragon is always how can I antagonize these people into a rage enough? Because that tends to be what I'm there for. Again, I would take a different technique as a podcast DM of, you know, just we're hanging out when we can DM, but you know.
Yeah. Although I might want to put that dragon back in there. That's a good idea. I like that.
Sure. Well, you know, I mean, you've already got a dragon whose whole deal is rebellion or whatever. So yes. You know, that's pretty squared away.
Yep, he's the blue dragon demigod of rebellion. That is a problem. I don't know why they had him in the school. They had a whole bunch in the school, like vengeance and rebellion, and you know, all at the secrets, same time. They should have seen it coming.
Wherever they are,
yeah. I mean, you know, that's like, you know, whoever's just works mundane day job at like Arkham Asylum must feel the same way. Yeah. Like it's the only place for these people to go. So, yeah, I guess that's...
Do we have to have the Joker and Clockman and Calendar Guy and whatever stupid Batman film there is all in the same cells on the same level?
Yeah, even if I was diagnosed crazy, I'd be like, can I just go to a regular prison, please?
Yeah, please. Yeah, I mean, seriously, some of them are just like, you know, I just like to make puppets. Do I have to be here?
So, here's another quick question for you. Is there a moment in season one that you're most proud of? Is there a moment where you're like, oh, this was great, it went as planned, or just like, I was so excited to show this to the players?
I'm thinking, season one, what was I most proud of?
I know what we have.
My prediction is very...
Yeah, I would say, I honestly think when I was most proud is whenever I have to let go of what I've planned. So I had this whole plan that, you know, this was going to, again, go out like a normal Hogwarts kind of thing, right? And as soon as I realized that they weren't having it and that they were starting to tell a better story, that's my moment. So it's not a particular nailed down moment, but it's kind of the arc of how season one went, I think, is my most favorite thing.
That's great.
That's a very like reasoned, like almost like philosophical answer. I was really expecting you to just be like, oh, the Dean's a beholder. You know, that would have been, I would have had the hardest time holding on to that. But, you know, like both of those things.
I have to say, you know, that's a very good point. Revealing the Dean was a beholder and how it was revealed and watching the playback on all, that's what I love about video. You get to see the playback on all the players' faces. That was pretty great. I'm not going to lie. he's a tough voice to do for a long period of time, right? But for the little bursts, yeah, it's been great.
So this is, you know, I think a universal Dungeon Master like sort of conundrum. Is a cast of five ever difficult for you to wrangle? Like for this show or mm-hmm. or in general, like it's pushing the boundaries of large, what we would consider to be large.
Yeah. Let me see. Well, I ran Rivals with a group of six. And this one is a group of four, normally five when Zendar's there, but then it cuts back to four. I prefer four. I think it's a better way to tell stories with people, but just enough people that it doesn't feel like it's just you talking all the time. But I found that even with the group of six, what I would do is I would just find reasons to separate them. Just okay. find reasons to isolate characters or put characters two at a time, and then just trust that, the players at your table will have the patience to sit there for 20, 25 minutes while you focus on two or three characters, really nail down their story, and then jump back over. You just have to like be in your head where everyone is so that you can jump from place to place and keep everyone kind of in the same timeline. As long as you can do that, I think more than six would be a problem, but I can run six people, nope, you know, without issue.
Yeah, your podcast is without a doubt the one that I've listened to the most about that has the most splitting the party, where it doesn't go horribly.
Yeah, it can go badly, so there is that.
And I think the school setting, to me, at least in Rise, has a lot to do with it, where, you know, it is psychologically broadly dangerous, but if you, you know, did the same sort of make every effort to split the party and you were running, what's the, like, the Mad Wizard's dungeon or whatever, and it was just like a kill house, yeah, you know, that could lead to some bad feelings.
Yeah, that would be a bad move. Fights. Yeah, I mean, in Godsfall, they would split all the time. Like, there's this whole end of one season where they're literally in three different places, and I'm having to run three different groups on opposite sides of the world. And that was difficult. Boy. It's like, you know, when they can't just, like, easily meet back up, that gets hard. But, you know, we managed to pull it off.
Yeah. All right. Yeah.
So, this one might be brief. It might be a long question. I don't really know. We're asking this, you know, obviously for anyone who's listening, but also for us, because this is us. Yeah. What advice do you have for anyone who's wanting to follow suit in the kind of things you've done in the podcasting world and specifically in, like, real play D&D or any other tabletop kind of thing?
I get that question a lot. The first answer I have was that it is a lot more crowded field now. When I started, there were podcasts out there, but there were many, many less than there are now. I mean, there's thousands, tens of thousands, maybe. I don't know how many, but there are a lot of podcasts out there. So trying to get heard is a bit more difficult. That said, if you're just starting out, there are ways that you can do this and sound, I don't want to say spend money, because I hate telling people to spend money. But if you're really dedicated into this, make sure you sound the way you want to sound from the beginning. And as I said earlier, it's not that expensive. You can get a board that runs four mics for $99, and the mics that I'm using, these short 58s, you can get used for like $55-$60 each. They're indestructible. You can have what sounds like a very professional setup for way less than a grand easily. Probably less than five. In fact, way less than 500 easily. If you want to really do this, invest in your sound. Record separate tracks, even though it takes more time, even if you don't use them, so you can edit down later. And just have a story that you want to tell. Don't podcast a podcast. Don't be like, I want to be heard because I think my group is fun or funny. That's great, but you want a story to tell. You want something that you're actually saying, because you're sharing this with the world, and there needs to be a reason beyond just, let's hear a fun game. In my opinion, there's plenty of people who are just like, let's hear a fun game and put it out there, and that's great. The other the other suggestion I would give is to like double up, do two things at once, run, even if it's a single webcam, recording or broadcasting live while you record the audio to edit down later. That's two different things you get out of doing one thing, and you can find two different audiences that way. You can track down your Twitch audience and your podcasting audience at the same time, and then just promote. Everyone likes free dice.
Oh sure,
give away free dice.
Fair.
Yeah. I'm in the running for some free dice. Don't pull any strings on our account, Aram. I know that's not your business anymore.
The rest of the cat. Seriously, RV runs all of our marketing. RV got us Level Up Dice to be a supporter. RV got us Wormwood to be a supporter, who literally sent each one of us a dice tray and a dice
bowl. Yeah, I saw some of those. Yeah,
just
killer.
Oh, I mean, I've wanted the Purple Heart one forever, and I just didn't have $300 to drop down on it. So it was amazing. And so another thing about running a show, you're not the main person. If you have a cast of people you trust, they are going to be smarter than you at certain things, maybe at many, many things. And RV is a better marketer, a better email writer, a better producer than I will ever be. So it's great for them to take that over. Joey, who plays Theodore and goes by Gnome online, is better at social media than I could ever hope to be. Is just smarter and more clued in than I could ever imagine. So if your players are willing to participate and join in, find what they're great at and just let them go.
I think engaging with the Gnome on Twitter was how we first got into it, right?
So yeah,
oh, awesome.
Yeah, Ollie found him. But
yeah, I said something. For some reason, he responded, and I don't think it was even a part of the Twitter or part of the show. And I was like, oh, this guy's cool. And found the podcast through that, and it was like, all right, it's time.
Awesome.
And then for some reason, you people kept talking to us.
Yeah. Yeah, we talked to people. We thought you were nice. I mean, unless you're a jerk, we're gonna keep talking with you.
Yeah, no, we've yet to blow it, so that's pretty good. Yes. And I mean, that's also our secret cheat code is just like, hey, if we find podcasts to review, we're a podcast.
Yeah.
People already listen to that one. Perhaps they'll listen to this one.
Yeah.
It's just a straight A to B, but like, and we could never review a review podcast. That would be like real crossing the screen territory.
I know. I really, really want to.
I mean, maybe once, but that's setting a dangerous precedent. But, for something, fiction, it's always great fun anyway.
Sure.
And
if you're going to review a review show, I would look at the DMs block, because I think you could really get a good review out of some of the things they do, especially the meatier things when they're just taking apart certain aspects of D&D. I think that would be a really good one to look at.
Oh, yeah.
All right, writing it down.
Yeah, writing it down.
So, you've mentioned a number of different things, your superhero projects you got going on, Godfall. How many projects do you have going on right now? Like, what are you doing?
I have two officially. So I have two official projects going on. Three if you count the Rise book. But I kind of count the Rise book in with Rise of the Demigods. But if you count it separately, that's three. The superhero project, I want to say I'm not working on it, but I'm literally walking around Chicago with a microphone on a boom pole collecting audio. Like, if the L travels over a bridge, I want to hear the L traveling over a bridge. So when I put my players there, I can put the Foley in the background. That kind of stupid,
so
ridiculous
good
stuff, right? So I'm working on four.
All right. Well, it sounds like you're a pretty busy man.
Yeah, stupidly. It's shocking that I'm single.
So we're kind of running out of like pre-planned interview questions. So I guess the last pre-written one is just, what's the next thing that you're going to be doing? What's the next big project?
It's definitely going to be the superhero show. It's going to be Evolution Earth. I've thought about this thing for too long and put too much effort into it for it not to be. Beyond that, I've been working. It's going to start as a one-shot. It might evolve to a larger project. I'm working on games for Gen Con, and one of them is a Cthulhu game based at the 1897 Chicago World's Fair that I'm really excited about.
Mm-hmm. Sounds interesting.
Yeah.
Well, if you don't mind asking, if I ask you a couple more random questions,
sure.
You just mentioned Gen Con. What's it like going to these conventions and being, one of the attractions?
That's interesting.
Like, a lot of people definitely go to conventions and love it, especially nowadays it's becoming more popular. but I'm assuming you've experienced it from both sides.
Yeah, it's weird. It's like, you know, for the most part, you can, again, just blend in and no one knows who you are. I put on the God's Fall shirt, it's different. But for the most part, you can just be, you know, there. And I'll run my games and I'll do the panels, and it's great to see people show up and you know, hug them and sign books and all that, and that's fantastic. There's the only one where I've gone where I've been kind of a focus is there was a queer quest game out in Portland where I was flown out to run a charity game where people would, you know, pay at the high roller table and we would sit there and just play a game. That was really interesting. I liked it. I felt very, but but I just feel like people need to get their money's worth, right? So I'm just like doing the best I can, you know, shaking as many hands as possible, talking to as many people as possible. There was a meetup where there was a 13-year-old kid whose mom brought him there who loved the show, and that was just amazing. So, you know, it's great, but you need time. You know, I have a lot of anxiety issues and a lot of mental issues, basically, that I take a lot of drugs for. And there are times when I need to escape and just be alone. And sometimes it can be a little hard to be alone. So you have to make sure to budget out space for that. You have to make sure your hotel's kind of close so you can run away. And as long as I've got that escape, I can do it. And I'm not talking down it. I love it. I absolutely love it. And 95% of the time, it is a wonderful sharing and loving experience. But I also need a way to get away once in a while.
Oh yeah. Makes total sense. Yeah. Like it's, you know, it's if you were to treat the whole, and I'm speaking totally out of my ass, and you know, we've not done this before.
How's that any different from ever?
Oh, come on. You know, I can talk about D&D with authority somewhat. you know, just having like, if I can imagine myself there, and if I were going in with the mindset that like the whole time I'm there is like work time, and it's like, oh, I don't want to miss anything. Yep. You know, that would just kill me day one. Like I'd be on the floor. So you know, like that I think is a really good piece of, you know, letting yourself breathe and having that time away too as a part of the process. Like that's good.
You've mentioned it a few times now that, you know, you have your own anxieties and mental distress issues that you work through, and obviously nowadays everyone's realizing, oh, we all have something and we're trying to all figure it out as we, you know, become understandable and decent human beings.
Yep.
Cooper and I definitely have our own issues, and we resolve them all very differently. I am the opposite of you and Cooper in that if I feel anxious and uncomfortable, I need to find someone to be next to.
Oh, wow.
Otherwise,
okay.
Yeah. And I was just wondering, what advice can you give to anyone, you know, with this sort of like, this the fear of getting overwhelmed and letting the anxiety overcome them?
Well, know that there's a lot of people in your same boat. And that there are stations, especially like at Gen Con, there are places you can go to. There are mental health booths that'll be like, just come here. There are LGBTQIA, you know, groups who will be like, we're allies. Come here. If you feel unsafe, come talk to us here. And there's a lot of amazing groups set up at conventions, you know, that are specifically targeted on making sure your mental health is going to be okay while you're there. Find those groups, seek them out. They are amazing people. I cannot recommend them enough. If you go to the Gen Con website, I'm sure they're listed, but I'm not exactly 100% sure where to point people to beyond that. But there are many groups out there filled with wonderful people who are just looking to make sure that your time at the convention is safe and fun.
All right. That's great. I never would have even really thought about that.
Yeah.
I think that goes back into like our, you know, ways online bit from earlier where, like, you know, mental health stuff has also just become so much more visible now, and people have the resources to, like, you know, network and just see their own experiences that someone else might be having as well. And, you know, that stuff's all great.
Yeah. I'm excited that, you know, mental health especially has become such a accessible thing or acceptable thing. Coming from a Cuban household, the opinion of mental health is you have it, you're fine. That's about it. That's
right. You have a mind, whatever. We all have one. Yeah.
I've noticed this a lot.
Yeah, my dad doesn't believe that anxiety exists. Yeah. So we all exactly. We all have something.
I've noticed this in a lot of like minority homes. Like if you're there, mental health isn't a thing. The only thing that matters is, do you have money to live and do you have a home? Okay, we're good. Let's keep going.
Yep. Yeah, I come from Armenians, right? And they're like, well, we survived the genocide, so what's your problem? Yeah, well, you know? It's like, well, yeah, it's kind of hard to argue that. It's hard to, like, there's some nuance in between those two things. Yeah. Great grandma, but what can you do?
And it's difficult to argue them because, like, my father and my mother, we came from Cuba when I was, like, 4, and they led political groups against a communist government and got exiled from their country. So I'm like, oh, I can't say shit.
Right, exactly. I just feel that today, you know? but it's real. It's totally real, and you can't be like, well, this isn't as bad as that, or this isn't as troublesome or challenging as that is, because everyone's got their own battles, and everyone has their own experiences within those battles of what is hard for them.
Mm-hmm. And with the changing of technology, there's so many different things to be anxious about or to notice and feel that it's a part of you, even if sometimes it's not. Like, I know sometimes I look towards global warming and just kind of sink down inside myself, like, nope, we're all going to die.
Oh, we're all going to die. I mean, it's like, I remember being a kid reading Superman and being like, no advanced society would be that dumb about their own self-destruction, and yet here we are. You
know? I think is one of the, like one of the really great things about D&D for, like, on an escapist and on, like, a you know, an actual, like, healthy level is, you know, A, your D&D character can always bring an active, sometimes violent ownership of my own situation, and you don't get to tell me what I do or do not feel. And also, the root of evil tends to be in a person you can go and kill, or, like, some kind of staff or gem that you can go break. Instead of, you know, this broad systemic. And I do like, though, the, you know, the, like, Rise, for instance, and other things are, like other fantasy media is taking a much more nuanced approach to, like, you know, I'm not invested in Game of Thrones whatsoever. Like, I don't really know. A lot of people are saying, that finale, not so great. It's alien to me, but, like, there's lots being made about, like, that maybe being a global warming analog, maybe not. But
I feel like that's a little on the nose, considering the few clips that I've seen of global warming with this Game of Thrones analogy. Mm-hmm. But whatever.
But still, and I mean, I know that in literature stuff like that has always been present, but like it's just becoming more mainstream. That desire, you know, not just I'm going to play D&D so I can pretend to be a cool strong man, but also I'm going to play D&D so we can act out justice for a change.
Yeah. Right. Or have some agency. I can't solve a global warming, but I can solve this. Yeah, absolutely.
There's also the idea of any, you know, story, any, especially with superhero style or D&D magical, I'm a demigod kind of thing, the power fantasy for people who, you know, we have no money, we have no, like, power to control things, but in this setting, we can enforce our will to some extent and even create some of the world ourselves. And I feel like that's what made D&D so popular, any tabletop game so popular, because you are part of the creation. You are part of the world itself, more so than in the real world, I suppose.
Yeah, you have agency. You have agency to change major things in your world. And with time and effort, any person can become powerful enough to make those changes.
Yeah, rad. Yeah. I'm sufficient. I mean, I don't want to squander anyone's time.
Yeah,
So if we just continue to whirlwind around, but
no, sorry, I'm a talkative.
No, that's fine.
Mm-hmm. More is better. No problem, man.
All right, but that is pretty much everything we had planned. So would you like to plug anything that you're doing? I'm sure that you know you don't need our help, but.
It's always good. My name is Aram. I am the producer of the Actual Play podcast, God's Fall and Rise of the Demigods. You can find out information about both on Twitter at Vartian, V-A-R-T-I-A-N.
And it's a pro follow. Even if you're not, you know, the biggest D&D head, our audience is various people get drawn in for various things, but you know, like this whole crew are just people you want to have on your Twitter timeline anyway, and hey, you might win some dice.
Do you have a Patreon that anyone can, you know, help support you doing everything?
I do indeed. Everything is under one, so it's patreon.com/Vardian.
Okay.
Excellent. Let's do our own plugs, like, off camera. You know, we've got a whole, you know, spiel. We don't need to take up your time with all of that. But thanks so much for joining us, Aram.
My pleasure.
It was really a treat. This is our first time ever doing anything like this, the two of us, so.
Yeah, I'm not sure if you can notice we're a little starstruck.
Oh, yeah.
Well, you guys are great, honestly. It was a great interview. Just like talking with friends, so it was perfect.
Yeah, appreciate it. Appreciate it so much.
Awesome. All right. Well, one other thing. Sorry, just one housekeeping thing. What do you want this format in? Is a WAV file okay?
WAV file is totally fine. Yeah, I'll make it happen.
Perfect. Then I will save it out, and I will get it to you ASAP.
Excellent. Thank you so much, Ron.
Thank you all. Have a good day, Matt.
Take it easy.
See ya.
Hey everyone, thanks so much for listening. This is Coop from the future, and we said we were going to do our promotion. We didn't want to take up any more of Aram's time, so let's keep it short and sweet. First of all, thanks so much for listening, and if you go to patreon.com/deltacryptidproductions and give us some money, you'll earn way more thanks. If everyone listening gave us $1 a month, it would genuinely change our lives an extreme degree and let us do more and better shows. Starting at the $3 a month level, you get bonus episodes. Each episode we record, we do a little bonus where we sort of remix the topic of our review. Not sure how we're going to remix this one, but we'll figure it out. At higher levels than that, you can dictate what you want us to do a show about. You can join us on an episode if you want, or you can just give us a message that we will include in the self-promotion corner. We can make it a you promotion corner as well. Even if you don't have any money to sling, we totally understand. We certainly don't have any money. You can hop on to iTunes and give us a 5-star review. No need to give us any other kind of review. A 5-star is perfectly fine. And if you want to actually write a review, we would be more than ecstatic to see it. But that's all. Otherwise, just, you know, hit us up on social media of any kind. If you, you know, have something to say, we really just genuinely love to hear from people. And again, thank you so much for listening. Big thank you to Aram. I doubt he's going to listen to this. I can hardly stand to listen back through my own voice. So, you know, but to Aram and the whole Rise of the Demigods crew for being so, you know, open and forthright with communicating with us and giving us a lot of good stuff. So we appreciate you and all of you listeners. And goodness, who else do I appreciate? My cat. Think about who you appreciate today and tell them thank you. That's all. Gotta go. Bye.